Moncrief on News Talk.
In the days before Spotify told you what you liked, there were other ways to find out about pop music based on as much as what the artists looked like, as much as what they sounded like. And one of those routes was the magazine Smash Hits. Back in the day, Tanya Sweeney would devour it on a weekly basis. Good afternoon, Tanya.
Good afternoon. Devour it. I love that verb. I did devour it now.
Okay, right. So when, can you remember how old you were when you first discovered it?
I think I was about 9 and I had just come into some pocket money. I used to also work on a newspaper when I was 10 and I got some money for both writing in the paper and delivering the paper on the other side. So I was feeling very flush in the news agents. And I was always a little bit afraid of the music magazines because I felt it kind of wasn't my wheelhouse. You know, this was something that my friends' older brothers and sisters did. So I was always very intimidated by pop music and stuff like that. So I picked up a copy and I remember it was the poll winner's party. They had a poll, you know, on who was the best and who was the worst. And Madonna, of course, was sweeping the categories in every which way possible. But the Beastie Boys were the worst band. I remember that much.
Huh.
And yeah, which is very strange because obviously they, but, you know, I think that was around the time of You Gotta Fight for Your Right to Party, you know?
Yeah.
But so I read it and I remember just feeling so energized by the entire vibe. I mean, if anyone remembers Smash Hits, their whole kind of shtick was that it was irreverent. They didn't take it themselves too seriously. It was really bubbly and high energy. And they basically, not that they took the mick out of the pop stars, but they didn't treat them as, you know, serious musicians. They wanted to know what their favorite food was. They wanted to know their favorite day of the week, what color their underwear was. It was all very sort of trivial, but this was the sort of stuff you just weren't getting anywhere else. But it did make you feel you were a little bit closer to the artists in question.
Yeah. And prior to Smash Hits, was there music playing in your home or anything like that?
Not really, no. I mean, my parents were not... my mum loved Neil Diamond and ABBA and stuff like that. But, you know, it was on in the car and that was kind of about it. So, I mean, we used to watch Top of the Pops. And again, I used to have babysitters that would come in and would know all the music. And I always felt I was just a little, you know, kind of with my nose pressed up to the glass, you know. So I didn't really have any, you know, jet stream to travel in, really. Mm. You know, I had to kind of blaze my own trail.
Yeah. So how did you figure out the process then of knowing what you did like? Was it just based on what Smash Hits was presenting to you?
Yeah, well, there used to be these fantastic compilations as well. Now that's what I call music.
Yes.
And I think I started on number 9, right, back in the 80s. And I mean, at the time, I do remember the Stock, Aitken, Waterman. Talk about a stranglehold. Oh my God, they were just all over. And Australian soap stars were all over the pop charts like a virulent rash. And I think that was probably my gateway in to just enjoy that really harmless, you know, kind of bubbly pop, you know. I mean, I would, the My Bloody Valentines and all that and the Slow Dives would come way later, you know, and the Sonic Youths. But at that time, I do remember just being so taken by, you know, the sort of boy bands, the girl bands. It was all very collegiate. They all seemed to know each other. I suppose when I was 9 or 10, I used to be like, oh, I'd love to be part of that gang. And Smash Hits made you feel like you were in that kind of clubhouse. You know, they talked to you as if you were already in the know. You knew who everyone was. They had this sort of shorthand and they used to put down all these kind of strange little sayings. You know, there used to be a mention of bleh every single episode, which I greatly appreciated. And snip was the other big one, which meant you were being cut off somewhere, you know. And there'd be all these kind of inserts from the editor, which, of course, I thought was incredibly witty and funny.
Yeah. So whether I assume Smash Hits would, you know, they would lean towards pop music. So there was probably bands and artists that you see more of in Smash Hits and other bands and artists you'd never see in there.
Well, funnily enough, they used to have, you know, like the likes of Bon Jovi or, you know, New Order. I mean, they had the kind of serious artists in. Mm. And I remember there was a great... There was a great book out a couple of years ago by Sylvia Patterson called I'm Not With The Band. She was a smash hits writer, and she basically talked through all of the kind of people that she had dealt with. And she said, of course, that the pop stars, your Jason Donovans and all that, were great because they were in on the joke and they knew it. But every so often she'd come up against somebody like Prince or John Bon Jovi, and they would just really not be on board with what smash hits was trying to do, you know. And I think that's why we as kids really loved it, because, you know, it felt like incisive music journalism. I mean, to be able to go through the week knowing that Craig Logan from Bross liked Guinness, I mean, was amazing. And I always say that there, and I said this to Alex Cadiz is a former editor who I met recently. That's what prompted me to write the column in the Irish Independent. And I said, I think neuroscientists are going to finally locate a part of the brain in which all the smash hits trivia just dropped in and never left. I mean, and I say this every time I make asparagus, I think of Mick Hucknall because he hates asparagus. I know that because of smash hits. And every time I say I'm a chocoholic, I think of Joe Elliott from Def Leppard because he said he was a chocoholic too. So, you know, there's all these kind of pointless, and there was a great Twitter thread a few years ago about all of the pointless stuff that we remember from people like Westlife and Brother Beyond and Curiosity Killed the Cat. I'm really reaching back now through the annals of time with these ones. But it was absolute, I mean, japes is the word, you know. And when you're 9 or 10 and you're just sticking your toe into that and you're a girl, you know, and you don't have anyone kind of shining the torch except for people like Smash Hits and Top of the Pops. I mean, I think they both came on the same day, if I'm not mistaken. So it was like double bubble for me at 10 years old between Smash Hits and then Half Seven at Night, Top of the Pops. I mean, what a time to be alive.
Owen says, as a teenager in the 80s, I'd buy Smash Hits every week and had the bedroom walls covered in photos from Frankie Goes to Hollywood, Duran Duran, Culture Club and Madonna. And of course, Top of the Pops every Thursday evening. Gosh, you're like twins with Owen. What posters are on your walls? And did that change?
Oh, do you know what? I used to absolutely go mad. I mean, I had the ceiling done as well.
I
think because my mum had very nice pink wallpaper and so that was obliterated soon. And I think she used to just open the door, take a look at, you know, Depeche Mode, Curiosity Killed the Cat, Brother Beyond, Bross, Jason Donovan, Sonia, whoever else was knocking around the pages, smashes. I think she just closed the door and hope it would all blow over. Unfortunately for her, I then started to take out the gig adverts from Melody Maker and Select and NME, and then I started to put them on instead of the other posters. So I don't think I saw wallpaper for a very long time.
Okay, so did it change over time? Can you remember maybe, I don't know, when you reached your teenage years and you started moving away from certain bands and towards others?
Oh yeah, I mean, I think what happened was somebody played me a Smashing Pumpkins album in school and it changed my entire life. And I always say, had she not done that, I would probably be working in the civil service. But as soon as I heard Smashing Pumpkins and as soon as I heard Nirvana, I was like, right, that is it. It has to be. I have to work in the music industry. And sure enough, I did eventually, you know, when I became a music journalist. But it was like, you know, it's such a cliche to say, but it was like going from black and white into Technicolor, you know, like Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz. I just remember it all just coming into view there and then. And I ran after that kind of music then with an incredible fervor. I mean, the pop stuff was great fun and all the rest of it, but the other stuff was just, it was next level, really.
Yeah. And Alex Callis, who you mentioned earlier on, now you met her because you're both fancy authors now. That was, Alex doesn't do smash hits anymore. Smash hits is long gone, I suppose.
Well, smash hits, RIP, indeed it is. God help us, it is. But yeah, Alex is after putting out a novel called Big Nobody. She also was working in music management. She worked with Take That and worked with some of the Cowell Gang, you know, so she would have managed Little Mix and One Direction and all that. So she has a story or two up her sleeve, and we keep saying that we're going to go out, have a couple of gins and just throw it all out on the table. And I really can't wait for that day.
Yeah, it's actually extraordinary. The Beastie Boys getting worse group and smash hit Circa. It was Circa, the album License to Ill. That's probably because The Sun were up to their old tricks trying to get them banned from the UK and printing stories that they had insulted people in wheelchairs, which is absolute rubbish. Mr.
That sounds very right. Yes, that, yeah. And in fact, that does track. Yes.
Yeah. No, it's amazing that, like, that somebody has a vivid memory of that. Mr. P says, "My smash hits fact: Alison Moyet did housework in the nip." Says Mr. P.
It's all there. I'm telling you, there's a part of the brain where all of this stuff is, and if we just could find it, I tell you, I could. Yeah. We could power a city.
Was there a similar magazine to Smash Hits called Number One? Somebody else wants to know.
Oh yes, there was, and they were, yeah, Number One was fantastic as well. But yeah. Smash Hits had its own kind of argot and its own vibe. Number One was brilliant at, if memory serves, printing the lyrics, which were very helpful. I mean, Smash Hits did this as well, but Number One, I think, might have had better posters as well. Yeah.
Ah, did you? And so, did you graduate eventually from Smash Hits to another magazine?
Yeah, went from Smash Hits to, I mean, I was a magazineaholic, you know, so I would have gone from Smash Hits onto Just 17 and all that. And then I think music-wise, I remember when I was about 14 or 15, there was a phenomenal purple patch of like The Enemy, Melody Maker, Select, Circus Magazine, Rolling Stone Magazine, Kerrang. Yeah, I don't know where I even got the money for them, but I read them all. Amazing.
Tanya, thanks a million for talking to us today. That was Tanya Sweeney there, columnist with the Irish Independent.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.